Now, Monitor brings you Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence Spivak. Ready for this spontaneous, unrehearsed conference of four of America's top news reporters, whose questions do not necessarily reflect their point of view, but may be their way of getting a story. Now, here's the moderator of Meet the Press, Lawrence Spivak.
Welcome once again to Meet the Press. Our guest today is the Republican leader of the House of Representatives, Charles A. Halleck of Indiana. His job is to steer the administration's program through the House of Representatives, a House overwhelmingly controlled by the Democratic Party. As this session of Congress nears its end, the results of his work will be widely appraised. Mr. Halleck's election this year ended the 20-year reign of Representative Joseph Martin and brought to the leadership one of the most skillful fighters in U.S. politics. Mr. Halleck started in politics after the law school as a county prosecutor in Indiana. He won his first congressional seat in 1935 and has been reelected ever since. In 1952, he was one of the five men approved by President Eisenhower to run with him as vice president. And now seated around the press table, ready to interview Congressman Halleck, are Fletcher Knable of the Coles Publications, Robert J. Donovan of the New York Herald Tribune, Sarah McClendon of the Camden Courier Post, and Marcus Childs of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Now, Congressman Halleck, we'll start the questioning with Mr. Childs.
Mr. Halleck, since Governor Rockefeller appeared in this program 2 weeks ago, there's been increasing talk about his getting the Republican nomination for president. Do you think your party is going to be split between Governor Rockefeller and Vice President Nixon, as it was split in 52 between Senator Taft and General Eisenhower?
Well, Mr. Childs, I suppose that would be about the first question. Now, I don't think the Republican Party is going to be split at all. As a matter of fact, in my opinion, the Republican Party right now is more united than it has been in a long, long time. Now, as to what that convention is going to do, I don't know. I am the minority leader in what Mr. Spivak has just said, an overwhelmingly Democratic Congress. I've got a big job to do up there, so personally I haven't taken part in this election, the pre-convention operation up to this point.
Well, you must have some ideas about it, though, Congressman Halleck. As Mr. Spivak has just said, you're one of the best politicians in this country, one of the shrewdest. What would you think if the convention were to be held today instead of just a year from today? Would the nominee be Mr. Nixon or Governor Rockefeller?
Well, if you ask my opinion on that, as of today, I think if the convention were held today or tomorrow, it would nominate Vice President Nixon.
Do you think that Mr. Nixon's tour of Russia has helped his chances for the nomination and the presidency?
Well, I would like to say, first of all, that in my considered opinion, Dick Nixon's trip to Russia has helped the United States of America and the cause for peace all over the world. I think he's done a magnificent job over there, and of course, if my appraisal of that is correct, then certainly that raises him in the esteem of the American people.
Now, I understand the word has come through that he has said publicly that he would like to have Mr. Eisenhower invite Mr. Khrushchev to this country. Do you think it would be a good idea if Mr. Eisenhower takes the vice president's advice to have Mr. Khrushchev tour this country?
Well, I think, Mr. Childs, that's a matter for the president to determine. As a matter of fact, at the White House meetings, a time or two, we have discussed the matter. So far as I know, no determination has been made, but certainly that is a matter for determination at the highest level, and that is for the president of the United States.
I might
add this further word. I'm glad Vice President Nixon went to Russia. I am glad some of the Russians have been over here. We've been all concerned about the imminence of a real trouble over Berlin. Now, I'm one fella, I'm not afraid to fight, and I don't run away from a fight, and sometimes that's the best way to keep out of it. But at the same time, I think there's much to be said for talk, for conversations that might bring about a road to peace.
Mr. Halleck, you know the temper of the House, and the members of the House are probably closer to the grassroots of America than anybody else. What do you think the reaction of the House of Representatives will be to Mr. Khrushchev's coming to this country?
Well, Mr. Spivak, I haven't canvassed the situation there. I am quite sure that there would be some in the House who would be very much opposed to any such visit. But again, I remember one time when another important head of state was suggested he be invited, and one member went so far in the House of Representatives to say that he would resign if that certain person came over here. Now, I don't know whether that would have happened or not. But again, I think it's a matter for the president to determine. And at that point, may I say, as one who has worked with him, who has watched the success of his efforts keeping us out of war when we could have gotten in, I'm perfectly willing to leave it to his judgment.
Mrs. McClendon.
Mr. Halleck, you spoke of this great Democratic majority in the House. Isn't it true that at times there's some who think that Charlie Halleck has a majority in the House with this Republican and Southern Democratic coalition?
Well, sometimes, Mrs. McClendon, we win, even though we're outnumbered 283 to 153. But I would add quickly at that juncture that I just happen to believe that it's been good for the country. And we couldn't have won, may I say further, any of those battles we've had up there, except that the people of this country are supporting us in what we're trying to do.
Well, sir, I wonder if you can tell us what the Southern Democrats have promised you in return for the support your Republican congressman gave them the other day in the House Judiciary Committee when the Republicans voted with the Southern Democrats to gut the Civil Rights Bill.
Well, let me say that there have been no promises that I know of. The thing to which you refer has been printed recently. It has been printed all of the years that I have been here, and particularly since I started out on the Smith Committee investigating the Labor Board in 1940. And you may recall, that's a little far back, but we discovered things there and exposed them that really shocked the people of this country, even as the McClellan Committee's disclosures have shocked the conscience of the right-thinking people of this country. Okay. Now, there's been, you say, gutted the Civil Rights Bill. Could I say to you, in all honesty, I am supporting the administration's Civil Rights Bill. The only thing that went out of the bill was Title III that was not proposed by the administration.
Sir, it was not proposed by the administration this year, but it was last year.
Well,
and it is the enforcement powers, is it not?
Well, it has to do with enforcement powers in school integration matters. But the principal part, of course, the Civil Rights Commission should be extended, and the voting record should be held intact. And then the new power that the Attorney General asked to deal with threatened mob violence as against court orders. That's something that has been proposed by the administration, and that I stand for. But I certainly would question your assumption that the bill has been gutted or that any deals have been made, because no deals have been made.
Mr. Donovan.
I want to add just one further word, Mr. Spivak. There are times when Democrats and Republicans get together up there, but it's a matter of conscience. It isn't a matter of anybody giving up anything that he really believes in for some sort of an arrangement. It is just simply that people happen to believe the same way. And again, may I say, I think that's pretty good for the country.
Mr. Donovan.
Congressman Halleck, President Eisenhower has won two overwhelming national elections. In those 8 years, the Republicans have three times lost Congress. Earlier today, Senator Javits, a Republican, one of those who supported more liberal leadership in the Senate this year, said that he was very dissatisfied with the image that the public sees in the leadership of Congress, the Republican leadership. Do you feel that you can regain Congress again while you still have the conservative leadership that is now you represent?
Well, I don't know, Mr. Donovan, whether I represent the conservative leadership. If we can oversimplify these terms, let me just say this, that I think the Republicans in the Congress are making a magnificent record of accomplishment for the people of this country.
What?
Now, I think our trouble has been that we haven't gotten the story across. People haven't understood the good things that we have done, and so... We haven't won. And, of course, there are other reasons. The Solid South is still too solid. the big city Democrat machines are still very powerful, controlling 60 or 70 seats. We've got an uphill battle all the time. There are probably more registered Democrats than Republicans. It shouldn't be that way, but I think we're making progress, and I certainly hope we do carry the House.
Mr. Donovan, continue if you want to.
Well, how are you going to do it? If you haven't been able to do it so far, how are you ever going to get control of... How will you ever get control of Congress again?
You mean the Republican Party?
Yes, sir. In what foreseeable year will you get control
all
of
Congress? All I can say, Mr. Donovan, is that that is a battle. It is an uphill fight. We are making progress. I think we are going to continue to make progress.
The Gallup polls, you're going backwards, Mr. Halleck. You're losing ground in the Gallup polls.
The Gallup poll has a kind of a strange circumstance. It commends... The people say that they think the Democrats can do a better job than the Republicans. And then 41% say keeping the peace is the biggest issue. Another 20% or such a matter says keeping the cost of living down. Another big percentage says holding down the cost of government. Now, we Republicans have been winning those battles for the people of this country. And I can't for the life of me understand why more people then don't say in total... The Republicans can do a better job for the country than can the Democrats.
Mr. Knabel.
Mr. Halleck, two questions. First, would you accept a nomination for vice president next year if offered?
Yes.
The second question.
That's quite a far cry, Mr. Knabel. I'm quite sure. But I would. If my party wanted me and whoever's nominated for president wanted me to run, I'd run.
You were so candid, you took me aback. The second question is, would you rather accept that vice presidential nomination if offered by Mr. Nixon or by Mr. Rockefeller?
Well, that's too iffy a question, Mr. Knabel, I'm sure, for me to answer. I said a moment ago that I have not participated in these pre-convention operations. In due time, I think that will be proper for me. I've been in conventions before, as I'm sure all this panel knows. But at the moment, as I say, I have a tremendous job, and I don't want to liquidate any influence or standing I may have by intervention in the convention operations at this point.
Just one question following Mr. Donovan. You are, I believe, a member of the Charles Percy Committee to write a set of principles for the party. If you could name one overriding principle that you think the Republican Party should stand for above all others, what would it be?
I would say freedom of the individual. And believe me, that's getting to be mighty important.
Mr. Donovan.
Speaking of conventions and the vice presidential nomination, Mr. Halleck, were you offered the vice presidential nomination at Philadelphia in 1948 by Governor Dewey, Mr. Brownell, or anyone associated with Governor Dewey?
Oh, I'd rather not go back over that, Mr. Donovan. May I just say that I thought you all you newspaper people wrote it pretty flat that I was going to be the vice president, and I kind of thought so, too, but... It didn't work out that way.
You wouldn't tell us who let you think it was going to be.
No, I don't think so.
Mr. Childs.
Mr. Halleck, the House is going to have to choose in a few days between a labor bill sponsored by the Republicans and many Southern Democrats and a so-called more moderate bill that came out of the committee, the Elliott bill. Now, if you can't get the Republican bill, would you rather see no labor reform measure passed at all?
Let me say, first of all, that you refer to a moderate bill. Let me just say, first of all, Mr. Childs, that there are two weak bills up there. The bill that came over from the Senate in the first place, and then after the House committee got through, as Senator John McClellan, who's done so much to bring about these disclosures, said, they had gutted his Bill of Rights proposal for the working man, and they had emasculated the bill in the House committee. So I say it's two weak bills. I am supporting a moderate bill, not a punitive bill, a moderate bill. Now, to answer your question, let me just say this. that a year ago, a weak bill came to the House of Representatives. It was thrown at us under suspension of the rules. We couldn't amend it or do anything, and we beat it 198 to 190. Now, as far as I'm concerned, I don't want to delude the people of this country into believing that something really worthwhile has been accomplished in respect to blackmail, picketing, secondary boycotts, hot cargo provisions, all of these other things that have, as a result of the disclosures, have become a stench in the nostrils of the American people. If we don't get a moderate bill with some effective provisions in it, I shall vote against the bill.
That will give you, of course, in the coming election next year, a very good issue, won't it? Because you will charge that the Democratic majorities in the Congress could not pass reform labor legislation.
Mr. Childs, may I say to you, I'm not looking for issues for the next election. I have been for doing something in this field for a long time, and may I say the President of the United States is for doing something. He's backed up by the Secretary of Labor. He has made proposals that go beyond the Landrum-Griffin bill. There's nothing in the Landrum-Griffin bill to punish anybody except the hoodlums and the racketeers and the gangsters and the people who've been siphoning off the union members' money. Now, we want to protect the small businessman. And may I say, Mr. Spivak, if it's all right, there's a great lobby operating. The Congress of the United States wants to write a good bill, and we've got it in the Landrum-Griffin substitute, 8,400. But the big pressure lobby on the other side is really working. This government belongs to the people of this country, and I, for one, hope that the people of this country make their voices heard here in Washington if they want effective legislation in this field.
Well, you've called the Elliott bill a weak bill. You say it would be a delusion to pass it, but isn't it true, Mr. Halleck, that both organized employers in the National Association of Manufacturers and the trade unions are very much opposed to this weak bill?
Well, you know, when this weaker bill then came over from the Senate arrived, the leaders of organized labor, many of us thought, were in support of the bill. Otherwise, it wouldn't have passed the Senate by 90-1. Now, I don't know what's come over them, but the House committee weakened the bill further. For instance, they took out the penalty provisions that would protect the right of the individual worker in the union to know where his money's going, to have a right to vote in secret, to otherwise participate in the affairs of his union. Now, what we're fighting for, and may I say at this juncture, there are going to be not just Southern Democrats voting with us, there are going to be a lot of Northern Democrats voting with us, and if they don't, they aren't coming back. We might as well understand that. Now, so that what we're fighting for is an effective bill dealing with these things that I have talked about, and believe me, I'm sure the overwhelming majority of the people want them dealt with in a fair, decent fashion.
Mrs. McClendon.
Mr. Halleck, we hear a great deal about how the Democrats are such great spenders and the Republicans are saving us money. How do you account for the fact, then, which the records show, that for the last 6 years the Democrats were in office and for the last 6 years the Republicans have been in office, that the Republicans have a net deficit, over three times more than the Democrats? It's $19,300,000,000 for the Republicans and $6,400,000,000 for the Democrats.
Well, I challenge those figures, but we haven't got time to go into all that. Let me just point out...
Oh, the accountants could give it all to you very easily from the Bureau of the Budget.
Oh, certainly, and I've got... I might have brought a lot of written figures here. Let me just point this out to you, Mrs. McClendon. President Eisenhower was elected in 1952... We promptly cut Mr. Truman's budget that he had submitted as the outgoing president, some $12 billion. We balanced the budget. We had some money to pay on the national debt, and we gave the people the biggest tax reduction they ever had in the history of the Republic. Now, since that time, the Congresses have been Democrat. They have been Democratic controlled, not the Republicans. They've been in charge of appropriations. They've had the votes all along. The fact of the business is that but for Republican efforts that have really been hard driving to hold down on appropriations and authorizations in the Congress of the United States, and particularly in the House of Representatives, which is my shop, believe me, the spending would have been out the window.
Well, sir, now, just let's look at that a minute. In the last 5 years, the Democrats have cut, under Eisenhower's request, President Eisenhower's request, by $10
billion. Mrs. McClendon, the people who bounce those figures around don't tell the whole story. They don't tell about the backdoor approach to the Treasury, where all they talk about is the money that is appropriated by the Appropriations Committee. But these other arrangements are made by which billions of dollars have been taken right smack out of the Treasury. They cost the taxpayers just as much.
Well, sir, I'm just talking about expenditures here.
Well,
you all have spent lots more money than the Democrats. The figures show.
Well,
maybe that assumption,
which I say is not correct, is one reason, Mr. Donovan, why we Republicans don't win more often. And it's maybe a job we've got to do. But I know this. I was the majority leader of two Congresses, the 80th and the 83rd, were Republicans. They really saved the people's money.
Mr. Halleck, you said a minute ago that money was going out through the back door. Now, what do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean by that is that, for instance, in housing and in many other areas, bills are passed by the Congress that simply direct the money to be advanced out of the Treasury. And they don't have to go to the Appropriations Committee to get the money. So people talk about the figures that came of the amount of money came through the Appropriations Committee, but it doesn't include these other figures that have to do with the same proposition, which is spending the taxpayers' money.
Well, are you saying then that under a Republican president, the deficits are even larger than what Mrs. McClendon just said they were?
No. Well, no. The statement of Mrs. McClendon that I challenged was that in these last 5 years, and this is a favorite topic, this is a favorite topic of Senator Johnson, who is a great man and a great personal friend of mine, but he likes to quote those figures. They have been disproved by the statement of the director of the budget and by all sorts of people who have pointed out this very thing that I'm talking about, which is that the backdoor approach to the Treasury has spent billions of dollars more.
Sir, isn't it true that the largest peacetime spending we've ever had has been in 1959, and the largest surplus that any president ever gave us was under Truman, a Democrat?
Well, I think maybe the statement as to the biggest deficit for 1959 as a peacetime year is correct. But we all know why that happened.
Why?
We all know that the Russian threat gravely concerned the American people. And as a matter of fact, more money was appropriated for national defense than the president thought advisable. But people have been blowing hot and cold on that one, too.
Mr. Knabel.
Mr. Halleck, speaking of the Russian threat, one thing puzzles me. The Eisenhower team rode into office chasing communists. Now it's courting them. What has changed in these 7 years? The H-bomb and A-bomb were still hanging over us at that time and are now. What has changed?
Well, I don't believe, Mr. Knabel, anybody in the administration is courting communists. I certainly am not. As a matter of fact, this administration has certainly been alert to the threat of international communism and the threat that poses to the peace of the world, and we've been doing what we could about it. But as I said a moment ago, I don't believe it's courting communism to try to work out, for instance, a threat over Berlin. I don't think it was courting communism to have the Formosa resolution. I don't think it was courting communism to have the Middle East doctrine. What this administration under Eisenhower has done is to make our position clear. And we've kept out of wars. I've been in the middle of it. We've kept out of wars we might have gotten into under lesser leadership.
But, Mr. Halleck, isn't it true that Khrushchev would never have had an opportunity to come over here, let's say, in the first 2 years, 53 or 54, when McCarthy was riding high, or Kozloff wouldn't have come at that time? Would you have... I don't see what's changed.
Well, apparently, Mr. Knabel, I may have misunderstood your question. Of course, there is always the threat of communism as a domestic matter, as a matter here at home. Infiltration of organizations and all sorts of destructive things. Now, certainly there's been no relaxation of our resistance to those areas. Now, on the other hand, there is a great power in the world, Russia, communist. We have had troubles with communist China. We all know the recent unpleasantness in Korea. Now, somehow or other, we've got to try to find the road to an honorable, just, and lasting peace. And certainly, I don't believe it's courting international communism to try to work out something in that direction.
Mr. Donovan.
Mr. Halleck, in your close view of things, has President Eisenhower abandoned what he used to call modern republicanism in favor of a more conservative policy that meets the approval much more of your leadership?
Well, Mr. Donovan, I've been going down to the White House since the president was inaugurated. I have attended all the meetings. I still attend them. I don't see any real difference of attitude or opinion as far as the president's concerned. I think maybe some of those things were overdrawn, but at the moment, as far as I'm concerned, I think he's helping the Republicans steer a magnificent course for the country.
Mr. Childs, a short one.
Mr. Halleck, the president has been conducting this campaign against inflation for a long time. Do you think this is one popular support or no?
I think, Mr. Childs, that the people in this country are becoming very much concerned about the cost of living, the destruction of their savings. And I really believe it's catching on, and I think the president's position in that regard has been sound.
I'm sorry, our time is up.
Monitor's thanks to Representative Charles A. Halleck of Indiana, Minority Leader of Congress, and the members of the panel for a stimulating and enlightening half hour. Meet the Press is produced by Lawrence C. Spivak. Now, this is Ben Grauer with a few somewhat serious words to temper the fun of this midsummer evening. These are the August days when you begin to read the headlines of men battling flames, of towns being evacuated, of millions of trees wiped out in a single holocaust. We've been using up wood in this country faster than we've been growing trees. One of these days, one big forest fire too many is going to make people suddenly realize one of the most important natural resources is being wiped out. Conservation men and forest rangers know the rules. Crush out cigarettes and pipe and cigar ashes. Break matches in two after using. Drown all camp fires, stirring the ashes round and maybe pouring water a second time. Find out the law before using any fire in the woods. Midsummer is the beginning of the forest fire season. Let's try to make the occasion go by uncelebrated. Well, thank you and goodbye for now. Monitor goes on, of course, all evening at its exciting pace. They're changing guards at Radio Central, traditional ceremony which begins like this.